This Sandwell News podcast is divided into chapters.
Welcome to the Sandwell News for the blind and vision impaired community living in and around Sandwell. This edition due with you on Saturday, the 4th of July, or a day or two earlier if you subscribe to our podcast.
Sunrise this week will be at 4:55, sunset at 9:30. On Tuesday, it will reach 25 degrees. Hello, SVI members, friends and volunteers. Here's the list of activities taking place next week. Monday, 6 July. Introduction to becoming a volunteer telephone befriender. West Bromwich Town Hall, 10 to 12:30 p.m. We are introducing our peer-to-peer telephone befriending scheme and welcome you to join this training and awareness session to find out more about what being a befriender involves. The morning will give you the opportunity to find out about the practicalities of the role. Hear from an experienced befriender and learn about some of the important do's and don'ts necessary to be an effective and support befriender. Tuesday, 7th July, gym at Portway Lifestyle Centre, 10 to 12 noon. Break a sweat and boost your energy with fellow SVI members. From treadmills and bikes to weights, there's something for everyone and plenty of support to help you along the way. It's a fun, social way to stay fit and active all year round, rain or shine. Line dancing at Dartmouth Central Club, 1 p.m. to 2:30 p.m. Put on your dancing shoes and join Ray and Jean for a lively line dancing session full of fun and feel-good moves. Whether you're looking to stay active, improve your balance, or simply meet new people, this is the perfect chance. Absolute beginners are welcome. Just come along and enjoy. We'd love to see you on the dance floor. Showdown, Portway Lifestyle Centre, 2 to 4 p.m. Come and join us for this fast-moving, interactive sport that's a mix of table tennis and air hockey. It's specially designed for blind and visually impaired players. But the best part is anyone can play and everyone has fun. Expect laughter, friendly competition, and a chance to try something a little different. Why not come along and see what it's all about? Wednesday, 8th of July, SVI Rocks, West Bromwich Town Hall, 10 to 12 noon. Come and join Rodrigo and Sarah Ann for our popular SVI Rocks session in the SVI Common Room. Whether you fancy a sing, want to bring an instrument, or just want to join in and have some fun, everyone's welcome. It's a great way to build your confidence, try something new, and make some noise together. Aquafit, Portway, Lifestyle Centre, 1 to 2 p.m. Get summer body ready. This gentle toasting activity in the water is suitable for everyone with expert instructor Alison. Contact SVI if you are interested. Women's group. Coffee and cake afternoon, West Bromwich Town Hall, 1:30 to 3:30 p.m. Come along and enjoy some sweet treats in a relaxed, friendly space where we can chat about the things that matter to women, from the serious to the social. This is your group, and we'd really love to hear your ideas about what you'd like to do over the next few months. It's a chance to share your thoughts, have your say, and join in conversations on topics like whether men should be welcome at women's group events. Thursday, 9th July. Showdown, Portway, Lifestyle Centre, 10 to 12 noon. Come and join us for this fast-moving, interactive sport that's a mix of table tennis and air hockey. It's specially designed for blind and visually impaired players. But the best part is anyone can play and everyone has fun. Expect laughter, friendly competition, and a chance to try something a little different. Why not come along and see what it's all about? Dartmouth Park Walk, 12 noon. Meet us by the Dartmouth Park War Memorial, from where we will take a leisurely walk around the park and Sandwell Valley, stopping off for refreshments. Please let us know that you are coming so we can make sure we have enough sighted guides. It is important that you contact the office either by phone, message, Facebook, or email to let us know that you are attending any of our events. That's all for this week. We look forward to seeing you soon. The SVI team, Sandwell Visually Impaired, West Bromwich Town Hall, West Bromwich, B708AY. Telephone 0121 525 4810. www.sandwellvisuallyimpaired.org.uk.
Headlines from the week's readings from The Express and Star. Wednesday, 24th of June. Teens charged after video led to weapons raid. All in a rush for ice cream and fans. Albion coach committed to Mozza vision. Councillor applies for cafe planning permission. Bring back an ordinary life, Corrie. Thursday, Deer Kite commits future to Albion. Tipton Flats block bid. Trams on track at last. Trio made blackmail threats. I wish I was 21 again, says veteran. Friday. Make aircon compulsory, says bus driver. Stuck baby pigeons freed after stuck inside a ventilation pipe. Water company's plea as heatwave demands soar. Consultation on plans for 9-bed HMO. Saturday. Disruption caused to tram. Crews called as trees and shed go up in flames. Mayor's message to future Prime Minister. Plea after baby's body found. Shylan, sorry for shocking Albion season. Monday. Cooking up a special treat for celebration. Albion book in a pre-season Portugal date. Church that has stood since 1883 to be turned into flats. Woman dies after going into water. Tuesday. Free financial walk-in advice. Bus driver campaigns for aircon buses, new milestone campus, new room offers, free community spacey.
And those stories courtesy of Express and Star newspapers. It's certainly been a much cooler week this week, which was very nice for our trip to Starport. And yes, I did get on to that boat trip and day in Starport, which was very enjoyable and relaxing. Now, just in case you do happen to hear the podcast a day or two earlier, then the postal listeners get the copy of our latest news. Here's a reminder of an event coming up, organised for SVI on Monday.
Hi, Sophie here, Wonder in Nature. I'd just like to tell you about the next Nature Connection session, which will be Connecting Through Smell, held at Oak House in West Bromwich on Monday, the 6th of July. You can join others to walk from SVI offices at 1:30 p.m. or join at 2 p.m. at Oak House. The session is Connecting Through Smell, so we will be exploring some of the various garden areas and the herbs and other smells, hearing about some of the history of their uses and getting creative with some of those herbs and smells. We'll see what we can come up with. It's a secret so far. I look forward to spending time with you. Please contact SVI offices to register your place and get any more information. Okay, thank you. See you soon. Bye.
Thanks to Sophie. Now coming up is the news from the last 6 days from the papers and also, of course, the usual Talking News Federation listings of audio described TV programmes and radio programmes and one or two other pieces from them as well. And I might be able to squeeze in one or two other items. Here's the first day's news.
This is James Brodie bringing to you stories from the Express and Star dated the 24th of June. Teens charged after video led to weapons raid. Two teenagers have been charged with possessing weapons after a police raid sparked by a social media video. West Midlands police officers executed an early morning warrant on Friday at an address in Oldbury and recovered a BB gun, which was suspected to be from the video, along with a zombie knife and a number of swords. Two teenagers were arrested at the scene, and the force has confirmed that Joshua Owen has been charged with possession of an offensive weapon in a private place, whilst a 15-year-old boy has been charged with possession of an imitation firearm in a public place and having an offensive weapon. A police spokesperson said, "We've charged two teenagers after recovering weapons in Oldbury. We've responded to a social media video of a machete and a gun being brandished in the street. Following inquiries, we recovered a BB gun, suspected of being in the clip, a zombie knife and a number of swords. Joshua Owen, 19, from Sandwell, has been charged with possessing an offensive weapon in a private place. He is due to appear before Dudley Magistrate on July the 28th. A 15-year-old boy has been charged with possessing an imitation firearm in a public place and having an offensive weapon. He is due to appear before Wolverhampton Magistrates on July the 8th. We're all in a rush for ice cream and fans. This story is brought to you by Josie Clark. Supporting this article are two pensioners sat in chairs at the beach underneath red and white umbrellas. Retailers are reporting soaring sales of fans, ice cream makers and sun cream as households are trying to cope with the extreme heat. Currie said it had seen an almost 1,500% increase in customers searching for fans on its website compared with the last weekend, and a 3,500% increase in searches for air conditioning products over the same period. Lakeland said the sales of electric fans were up more than 100% on the previous 4 weeks, while sales of cool bags for transporting food were up 262% and sale of ice cream makers were up by more than 500% on some lines. John Lewis said that sales of pizza ovens has soared by 557% week on week, while searches on johnlewis.com for silk scarf were up 200% in the last week. Tesco's are predicting a 60% increase in sales of ice, a 48% increase in sales of ice cream and ice lollies, and a 44% spike in sales of barbecue meat. Aldi, which has restocked its shelves with its previously sold-out collapsible pet pool and freezing chew toys, is also predicting it will sell 1 million burgers this week, a 50% jump on last week. It's also preparing for a 30% surge in beer sales to sell more than 500,000 bottles of its La Cruna sun cream and an 80% week-on-week increase. Coach committed to Moza Vision. This story is brought to you by Lewis Cox. Influential coach Matt Gill has committed his future to Albion amid a shake-up of James Morrison's backroom staff. Gill, who joined the club shortly after Morrison's caretaker appointment, was hailed as a key part in the club's push to championship survival last season. He has historically been assistant to Russell Martin, who took over as Leicester boss earlier this month, but Gill has opted to remain at the Hawthorns under Morrison as assistant head coach. Also appointed to Scott's coaching staff are the former Middlesbrough teammate Tony McMahon and Gavin Strachan, who have been coaches at Celtic since 2020 and previously number two at Doncaster and Peterborough. McMahon and Strachan, son of former Scotland boss Gordon, are first team coaches. Spanish coach Damir Bella, who first joined Baggies in Carlos Cobran's time in charge, has exited the Hawthorns after 3 seasons. Long-term Albion coach Lee Downings will return to his role as under-21s boss after stepping up to support McMahon in the first team coaching role in the final few months in the last season. Bowes Myhill remains as goalkeeper coach. Morrison said it's been great to have Gill on board for the coming season because he's a great coach and I enjoyed working with him last year. The players enjoyed working with him too and his efforts were important in us getting over the line. Alongside Bowes, they make up what I believe a strong group around me. They all have different personalities, qualities and excellent work ethic, which is important for what we want to do. Councillor lodges plan for town centre cafe he opened without consent. A councillor has applied for retrospective planning permission for a cafe he opened 2 years ago. Sandwell councillor Richie Macy, a newly elected member of Reform UK, opened Macy's Cafe in Fountain Lane, Oldbury, without planning permission at the end of 2024. Councillor Macy, who was first appointed cabinet member for Adult Services, Health and Wellbeing at the local authority last month, converted the former closed recycling centre into the cafe without first obtaining consent from planners at Sandwell Council. He applied for permission in February last year, but the plans were rejected that May. More than 12 months on, Councillor Macy has lodged another retrospective allocation. A statement issued with the application said the premises operates as a small-scale cafe servicing hot and cold food and drinks, primarily for consumption on the premises. The unit comprises of a dining area, kitchen and staff toilet facilities. The proposal includes internal alterations, installation of kitchen equipment and ventilation extraction equipment associated with the cafe use. The cafe is a daytime operation with the majority of customers dining on site. The proposal provides a local facility for workers within the employment area and supports local employment. Planners rejected the application in 2025, saying Councillor Macy had not shown why the cafe could not open in the preferred town centre location instead. The plans were also rejected for not providing enough parking spaces. The planners reported that given the proximity of Albury Town Centre and the vacancy and variety of units within, I find there is insufficient justification to support the use in this location. Additionally, there is no evidence to demonstrate that what provisions is available within Albury Town Centre would not be undermined by the retention of the cafe use. Last month, Reform UK took control of Sandwell Council in a historic win that saw Labour lose grip on a power on the borough for the first time since 1979. Reform won 41 seats on Sandwell Council, including Councillor Macy, who was elected to serve Rowley with the second most votes as the party grabbed all three seats in the ward. Opinion by Dr. Roisin Doug. Bring back Corrie's dramas of love and everyday living. Supporting the article is a picture of the staff from Coronation Street back in the 1960s, with a caption saying that good old days at Coronation Street with cast members around the pub. Television can educate as well as entertain, but must it all be so relentlessly bleak? I've recently found myself asking rather unquestionable questions. Whatever happened to ordinary life on television, and what exactly do we need in today's troubled times? Take soaps. There was a time when they offered a gentle glimpse into the everyday. Nothing earth-shattering necessarily happened in an episode of Coronation Street, Emmerdale or EastEnders. Someone quarrelled with a neighbour over a fence, a romance blossomed slowly, a character worried about paying the bills or fretted over an embarrassing secret. Think of Ken Barlow and Mike Baldwin and their rivalry over Deirdre, or Alfie and Kat forever falling out and finding their way back to one another, or Dirty Den and Angie Watts, whose fiery rows had Britain postponing cups of tea until the credits rolled. It was drama that felt recognisable and comforting because it resembled our own lives. Those quieter storylines mattered because they reminded us that life is not solely composed of crises. Most of our days are filled with smaller things, sharing a cup of tea, arguing over trivial matters, celebrating birthdays, making mistakes, and carrying on regardless. That, too, is drama. That is an immense beauty of the ordinary. Some of the happiest memories people have of television are not grand tragedies, but programmes that made us smile. Think of the Live Birds with the warmth and the wonderfully ordinary characters trying to make sense of life. Think of Butterflies, where Rhea Parkinson wrestled not with serial killers or kidnappers, but with the quiet disappointments and humour of family life. Think, too, of Bread, where the Boswell family faced hardship and irrepressible humour and resilience. And then there was Whatever Happened to the Likely Lads, where Bob and Terry's conversations about work, friendship and the changing world captured the everyday experience of millions. These programmes understood something many modern dramas seem to have forgotten. Everyday life is full of comedy, longing, misunderstandings, hopes, regrets and moments of unexpected joy. This story centred on recognisable people muddling through their life with humour, dignity and affection. So let's have characters like Benny, Sinbad, Hilda and Dot and bring back light-hearted storylines that made us chuckle or cry a little and recognise ourselves. Because today, turning on a soap often feels like an opening to a catalogue of human misery. Hardly a week passes without someone being kidnapped, diagnosed with a life-threatening illness, becoming addicted to drugs, confronting trauma, or surviving violence. I do not suggest that these subjects should never be portrayed. Many deserve public attention and can be handled with great sensitivity. Television can educate as well as entertain, but must it all be so relentlessly bleak? There are evenings where I simply do not have the emotional energy to witness yet another tragedy unfolding on screen. After an hour of news filled with wars, political instability and terrorism and economic uncertainty, I yearn for something lighter, something that allows me just for a moment to forget the troubles of the world, but then perhaps soaps are merely reflecting the times in which we live. Modern society is undeniably more complicated than the world we knew and grew up in. We inhabit an age of rapid social change, fractured communities, social media outrage and an endless stream of bad news delivered directly into our pockets. I don't think entertainment must always mirror our anxieties. Might it not also provide a refuge from them? I would like to see simpler plots once again, stories rich in the small details that make up most of our lives. Show me people getting up for work, grumbling about the boss, worrying about the mortgage, chatting over a cup of tea. At present, our news is serious, our politics is serious, and increasingly our entertainment is serious too. It can all become rather exhausting, all this seriousness. So here is my modest plea to the writers and producers of our beloved soaps. Give us a little more joy, let people fall in love without disaster lurking around the corner. Let neighbours squabble over hedges instead of surviving kidnapping. Let someone make a fool of themselves and the village fate. Please make us laugh again.
Hi, this is Debbie with some articles from the Express and Star from the 25th of June. Diakite commits future to Albion. This article is accompanied by a colour photograph of a young man in a blue top with a big smile pointing at the camera. The caption reads, "All smiles, midfielder Ousmane Diakite after signing a new 3-year contract with Albion." Albion midfielder Ousmane Diakite has been rewarded for last season's excellent form with a new 3-year contract. Diakite, who turns 26 next month, enjoyed the best spell of his Baggies career during the final part of last season, where he excelled under James Morrison in the run to championship safety. The tough tackling midfielder was out of contract this summer and had a 1-year extension triggered in March, but the club have moved to secure his future with fresh terms. The Mali international hailed the beautiful family at the Hawthorns and said his boss Morrison has been key to his improvement. "When I first came here, it was a little tough, but now I've adapted to the new challenge and I'm ready to get properly into next season," Diakite said. "We have a beautiful family here and that makes me very happy." Flats block bid opposite metro station backed. A council's plan to build flats opposite a new metro station has been approved. The application by SWG Construction and Sandwell Council for a two-storey block with 12 flats on the corner of Horsley Road and Railway Street, Tipton, was backed by the local authority's planners. The under-construction and much-delayed Midlands Metro extension from Wednesbury to Dudley includes stops at Horsley Road, just opposite the proposed affordable housing site. Housing officers at Sandwell Council said there was a critical shortage of 3- and 4-bed flats for families needing more space, which has been reflected in the mix of flats proposed in the application. The high demand for 1-bed flats from those classified with a non-emergency need, such as overcrowding, was nearly a year according to the council's figures, with very high waits of more than 4 years for a 3-bed flat and nearly 9 years for 4-bed flats. The land around Horsley Road and Railway Street is included in Sandwell Council's local plan as a site for 150 new homes. The council's planners said, "The principle of residential development at the site is acceptable and would assist with meeting housing need in the borough." On Track at Last, Town's First Trams for 96 Years by Mark Andrews. This article is accompanied by a colour photograph of a blue tram on some tram tracks with a man in a high-vis or suit standing in front of it. The caption reads, "The tram arrives in Castle Hill, Dudley." Dudley has welcomed its first tram in nearly 100 years with the completion of a test run of the new £649 million West Midlands Metro line. The tram took just over an hour to complete its 6-mile journey from Wednesbury, arriving outside Dudley Zoo about midday. It travelled through Tipton along the old low-level line at Dudley Port Railway Station before crossing Hanson's Bridge over Birmingham New Road. It's the first time a tram travelled to Dudley on rails since March 1, 1930, when a previous Wednesbury-Dudley tram line closed, replaced by Midland Red bus routes, although one was seen passing through the town last month on a low loader when it was being taken in for repair. It will be some months before the tram will be carrying the public, however. The much-delayed project had been due to finally open on August the 28th, but transport chiefs now say the tram will be running by the end of the year. For yesterday's run, the tram barely exceeded walking pace, being restricted to 3 miles per hour. Transport for West Midlands was pleased the journey had been completed successfully. The route, which largely follows the course of the former railway line, is the biggest extension to the West Midland tram network since the original Wolverhampton-Birmingham line opened in May 1999. It will link up with the original tram line at a new junction in Wednesbury, passing through Dudleyport railway station and Tipton, before terminating just past Flood Street. It will eventually continue to the Merrihill shopping centre. Work started on the line, which was originally to have run to Brierley Hill Town Centre in February 2020, with the scheme due to have been completed in its entirety by the end of 2023. Delays caused by lockdown saw the completion date rescheduled for summer 2024. But in July that year, the Express and Star revealed costs had ballooned to £550 million, prompting leaders of the West Midlands Combined Authority to mothball the Dudley-Brierley Hill stretch until further funding could be found. In June 2023, it was announced the total cost of the scheme had risen to £649 million. In July 2024, it was announced that the opening of the Wednesbury-Dudley line would be put back to autumn 2025. The date was then put back until after Christmas, and then at the start of this year, an opening date of August the 28th was confirmed. But this month, Dudley Council leader Councillor Patrick Harley said he had now been told that this date too would be missed. Meanwhile, passengers faced delays and disruption in Wolverhampton after two trams broke down. West Midlands Metro informed passengers yesterday of trams breaking down at Piper's Row and at the Royal, meaning services into the city would start and terminate at the Royal. Tickets were accepted on the National Express West Midlands 79 bus service. Trio made threat to cut belly open in £7,000 blackmail ordeal. Three men jailed for roles in terrifying attack that lasted for more than 4 hours, by Deborah Hardiman. Three men have been jailed for their roles in the £7,000 blackmail of a man whose brother was told his belly would be cut open if he did not pay up immediately. The man was punched during what the judge described as a terrifying ordeal after he was grabbed while out for a late night stroll with a friend in West Smethwick Park and West Park Road on September the 17th last year. Wolverhampton Crown Court heard the ordeal lasted for more than 4 hours. It heard the man was threatened with lock knives during the incident that saw him being driven through Smethwick and in Birmingham, while the defendants made repeated demands for the full amount to be paid by bank transfer. Haram Ram and Harpreet Singh, both 21, and Masmood Ahmed, 20, pleaded guilty to offences of blackmail and assault relating to the incident. The court heard the victim, who knew some of his attackers, was bundled into a silver Volkswagen vehicle before being driven to Edgbaston Reservoir. Mr. Philip Beardwell, prosecuting, told the court that the victim's friend managed to escape the attacker's clutches and contacted the police. Officers managed to locate the vehicle and the occupants. In the meantime, the victim's brother, who could ill afford to pay, got the money together in instalments of £5,000 and £2,000. Judge Jonathan Gosling said the incident related to a debt that was owed and the incident could not have happened out of the blue. These three defendants have pleaded guilty to blackmail and assault, occasioning bodily harm, he said. This terrifying ordeal for both men lasted over 4 hours when repeated demands were made to transfer a large amount of cash while someone was driven around and threats of injury were repeatedly made. Blackmail was the principal offence, he added. The assault was a planned attack and it was prolonged. The judge said, in mitigation, all three are young men. It is accepted by all counsel that a significant sentence is unavoidable. I accept that all three are genuinely remorseful and apologetic. The court also heard that the victim did not provide an impact statement about how he had been affected by the ordeal. For blackmail and for having a blade, Singh of Arden Road Smethwick and Ram of Grove Lane Handsworth were imprisoned for 40 months, while Ahmed of Holiday Road Soho was sentenced to youth detention due to his age for the same period. Due to all three already being in custody for 10 months, they will serve at least 6 months of the term before being released on licence. They must also pay the victim's surcharge. The judge also made a deprivation order for the knife. The defendants had originally denied the allegations but changed their pleas ahead of the trial on Tuesday. I Wish I Was 21 Again, Says War Veteran on His 100th, by Deborah Hardiman. This article is accompanied by a colour photograph of seven people standing in a line. In the centre is an elderly gentleman with a cane. On either side of him are the mayor and mayoress. Next to the mayoress stands a gentleman in black uniform with a red cap and a red belt, and the other people are wearing suits. The caption reads, Reg Smith with guests including Deputy Lieutenant Martin Levermore and Mayor Councillor Paul Singh. I've had a good life, but I really wish I was 21 again, confesses Second World War veteran Reg Smith as he celebrates his 100th birthday surrounded by family and friends. The former butcher was born Joseph Reginald Smith to parents Joseph and Cora at his grandparents' home in Compton Avenue, Wolverhampton. He was the eldest of seven children, and his siblings were Alan, John Philip, Cora, Margaret and Norman. He attended St Andrew's School and Hordon Road Elementary School before taking up an apprenticeship aged 14 at Harry Brown's Butchers in Coleman Street, Whitmoreens. I'd actually passed the exam for Wolverhampton Grammar School, but my parents couldn't afford to send me there. I finished school at the start of the war. I was Harry Brown's apprentice, but I never finished the apprenticeship because I went in the army at 15 or 16. At first I was in the Air Training Corps, and we used to meet at the Clarksons in Snow Hill. There were two huge warehouses which were used to store a Lysander and a Mustang which we used for training. I went to Scarborough to train and was put on a reserve list for the Air Force, but as it was nearing the end of the war, there were plenty of people on the waiting list. The day before my birthday in 1944, I got my RAF DMOB letter, and on my birthday, I got called up for the Army. I went to train in Bodmin and then Norton Barracks in Worcester. He served in the South Staffordshire Regiment, now the Mercian Regiment, and was made a Lance Corporal shortly before the regiment headed to India later in 1944. We were supposed to be sailing to Burma from Bombay. We were on our way to Chittagong when the Americans bombed Hiroshima, bringing the war to an end. So we ended up in Dehradun in the Himalayan foothills. We were there for some time due to Indian partition. When we left in 1948, I was the company sergeant major. We waited a long 2 months in Dulali, pronounced Dulali, and meaning people sometimes went a bit bonkers, before sailing back on the ocean liner Empress of Australia. I was in the cabin class, which was very posh, but before long I was back home and brought back down to earth with a bump. When he got back home, he returned to the butchery trade. In November 1948, he tied the knot with his fiancée, Sheila, who was aged 21, at St John's in the Square Church, and they lived in East Park and Penn, where they raised their family. They went on to have children Susan and Alan, grandchildren Simon, Ben, Alistair and Dominic, and seven great-grandchildren. Reg worked for Dewhurst Butchers for around 50 years, mainly in Walsall branches, before becoming its area training officer, until he retired in 1991. Sheila passed away aged 76 in 2004. Sometime later, Reg and his new partner, Mavis Gregory, moved to Algar Court in Penn Road, and sadly Mavis passed away in 2022. I've had a very good life and a good marriage. I was married for 56 years, and when my wife died, I was devastated. Afterwards, I got together with Mavis, who was a family friend, and I miss her very much too. It's been lovely to celebrate my 100th birthday, and I've had two lovely parties, which were great. My family and friends have been absolutely wonderful, but I really wish I was 21 again. There's some good things about being old, but I miss driving. I stopped driving 2 years ago because of issues with my eyes. Nowadays, everything feels crowded, whereas when I was a young man, there were no cars on the road. Me and my brother-in-law, who was in the motor trade, were the only people for miles around who owned cars, and I never passed a driving test because we didn't then. There were very few cars on the road. I bought my first car, a Ford Anglia, in 1955 for £300. Reg celebrated his milestone birthday with a big party at Penn Cricket Club and another at the retirement complex where he lives, organised by neighbour Caroline Jones and attended by civic guests, West Midlands Deputy Lieutenant Martin Levermore, Wolverhampton Mayor Councillor Paul Singh, Mayoress Mrs Ranjit Singh Dillon, and representatives from the South Staffordshire Regiment Association. In addition, he received telegrams from the King and Prime Minister Keir Starmer. This article is also accompanied by a sepia-toned photograph of a young Reg Smith in army uniform, and the caption reads, A young Reg Smith, he was 100 years old on June the 22nd.
This is Lauren with some stories from the Express and Star from the 26th of June. Make aircon mandatory, says bus driver. A bus driver has launched a petition to make aircon mandatory on public transport after struggling during the current heatwave. Gavin Hall from West Bromwich launched the petition, which has already gained more than 200 signatures, after struggling to cope under strenuous conditions. Many businesses, schools and public services have either closed or operating alternative hours, but many people are still going to work as usual, including bus drivers. Now, Gavin is calling for public support to make aircon mandatory on UK buses. On the Change.org petition, he said, "As a bus driver, I face the daily challenge of operating a vehicle under strenuous conditions. When temperatures rise, it becomes near impossible to concentrate, compromising both safety and comfort. One of the frequent complaints from my passengers is about the lack of air conditioning, which doesn't exist in many of the buses we drive. We propose making it a legal requirement for all UK buses to maintain fully functional air conditioning systems." The Department for Transport and the West Midlands Combined Authority have been contacted for a comment. Stuck baby pigeons freed after nesting inside ventilation pipe. Written by Deborah Hardiman, Chief Reporter. Contractors working at a waste energy plant got a feathery surprise when they discovered two baby pigeons stuck in a nest inside a ventilation pipe atop an 164 feet high crane. The team was working at the under construction Enfinium plant in Kelvin Way, West Bromwich, near the M5, when they came across the chicks, known as squabs, tucked in a nest created from plastic cable ties deep inside the piping. RSPCA Animal Rescue Officer Baldamia was sent to get them out on June 9th, after the contractors contacted the charity for advice about what to do with them. Bal said, "The squabs were in a nest of sorts that their parents had built from plastic cable ties deep inside a ventilation pipe on top of a 164 feet high crane inside the new waste incineration plant. The building had been sealed for ignition testing a few days earlier, which stopped the parent birds from returning to their young. A member of staff found the nest whilst inspecting the crane, and thankfully the young birds were alive, so he called it into us. I had to scale many flights of stairs and then scramble up to them. I was able to scoop them out unharmed and take them into our care. The squabs are now being cared for at the RSPCA's Stapley Grange Wildlife Centre in Shropshire. The Enfinium waste plant is being built at a cost of £500 million and is due to open later this year to process up to 395,000 tonnes of rubbish a year." Enfinium said, "We're grateful to the RSPCA for their work with our site teams in safely rescuing and rehoming the pigeons from our Kelvin facility. The charity website has plenty of advice about how to look after pigeons in need. It is also urging supporters to sign up for its Summer of Kindness initiative." Alongside this article is a picture of the two baby pigeons. One is a little bit larger with white fur, another a lot smaller with grey fur. They are both very, very chunky and fluffy, and they are zoomed in on inside a picture of a pipe. And the pipe is filled with dirt, rocks, twigs, plastic cable ties, clearly what the pigeons have scraped together to make their nest. It's captioned, "Baby pigeons rescued from vent on top of 50 metre high crane in waste incinerator." Water companies plea as it sees heatwave demand soar. "Highest level seen in 20 years as we cool down and keep our gardens hydrated." Written by Christine Dyer. The first water warning of the summer has come as we continue to swelter under hot, dry conditions. South Staffordshire Water has urged people to use water wisely as temperatures soar. It says the South Staff's water region is using 65 million more litres of water a day compared to 2 weeks ago. On Tuesday, it experienced the largest demand for water it had seen in the last 20 years. The company says it is being forced to adjust its supply settings to meet the challenge and that people may notice a difference in water pressure. A spokesman said, "We understand it is also our responsibility to save water, and this is something we take very seriously. We're talking to our high-volume business users, asking them to look at ways in which they can cut their water consumption. We're working really hard to produce large volumes of water each and every day. However, if water use continues at the rate we've seen in the last couple of weeks, we simply won't be able to keep up with the level of consumption. During this period of exceptional demand, we'll be making some operational adjustments. This means that you experience some fluctuation in your water pressure. We're asking people to keep to essential water use only. Whilst water companies struggle with demand, there appears no immediate threat of drought. One was declared last summer, but after a wet winter, seven Trent reservoirs are around 90% full. Alongside this article, there is an image of a woman using a hose to water her garden. She has blonde hair slicked back into a ponytail. She wears a red plaid shirt and blue jeans. She is holding a hose which is spraying water over large bushes and long grass. It's captioned, South Staff's Water Advice. Washing your car can wait for another day. If plants must be watered, do it early or late. Mulching garden beds to reduce watering. Do not water the lawn, it will recover. And avoid filling paddling pools. Consultation on plans for 9-bed HMO sees 63 objections. The consultation period on plans for a 9-bed HMO on Smethwick Street has ended with more than 60 objections. Residents are currently awaiting the decision from Sandor Council on plans to convert a property at 1 Queen Street, Smethwick, into a house of multiple occupation. The plan intends to house 9 residents across 3 floors in bedrooms of varying sizes, alongside shared communal facilities such as a kitchen, living dining room, bathrooms and ensuite shower rooms to support comfortable shared living. The application, which was submitted in May, was under consultation until earlier this week. It received 63 objections before the period closed. Among them, residents expressed their concerns on the impact the plans will have on the community. One resident wrote, "The proposed development would introduce a very intensive form of occupation into what is predominantly a family residential area occupied by long-term residents, including many young children and elderly people. The area has historically been a stable and quiet neighbourhood, and many residents are deeply concerned about the impact such a large HMO would have on the character of the community. One of the principal concerns is parking. The proposal seeks to accommodate 9 residents while providing only 3 parking spaces. The area already experiences significant parking pressure, particularly around the junction of Queen's Road and the nearby bus stop."
Hello, this is Sarbjit with your news from the Express and Star. Saturday, 27th of June. Disruption caused to tram network as lorry strikes bridge. Tram services were suspended between stations in the Black Country after a lorry hit a metro bridge. The incident occurred on Great Bridge Road, Tipton, yesterday. The road was closed for hours due to the lorry tilting and recovery being required. The road later reopened, but disruption to the trams continued. A picture shared on Facebook shows the lorry tilted on one of its sides while residents looked on. As a result of the crash, trams were unable to operate between Bilston and Wensbury Parkway. Services between West Bromwich Central and Handsworth Booth Street were also affected due to the damage to overhead lines. Trams were operating between Wensbury Parkway and Edgbaston Village, while a shuttle service was in place between Priestfield and Wolverhampton Station on both lines. Crews called as trees and shed go up in flames. Fire crews raced to a Black Country home as a blaze engulfed a shed and conifer trees. West Midlands Fire Service were called to the blaze at Turner Street, West Bromwich, shortly before 6:15 p.m. on Thursday. A fire engine and a 4x4 brigade response vehicle from West Bromwich and a fire engine from Tipton attended, the first arriving within 5 minutes of being mobilised. Crews found a large blaze engulfing a shed and conifer trees in the back garden of a residential property. Firefighters used 2 hose reels to extinguish the fire and they damped down the area, including an area of grassland nearby. West Midlands Fire Service said in a statement, "Shortly before 6:15 p.m. on Thursday, we responded to Turner Street, West Bromwich. A fire engine and a 4x4 brigade response vehicle from West Bromwich and a fire engine from Tipton attended, the first arriving within 5 minutes of being mobilised. There was a fire affecting a shed and 4 conifer trees at the rear of a residential property. The fire is believed to have started accidentally in the shed. Firefighters used 2 hose reels to extinguish the fire, and they damped down the area, including an area of grassland nearby. We left this incident at 7:50 p.m. Mayor, this is what I want to see from next Prime Minister. By Mark Andrews. There is a picture of Richard Parker, who has outlined what he wants from Sir Keir Starmer's replacement. The elected mayor for the West Midlands hope the next Prime Minister will put devolution at the heart of his or her agenda. Richard Parker said he would be looking at what any potential contenders would do for the region and would be pressing for greater control over the region's finances. He would also be looking for greater powers with regard to post-16 education and training. He said, "I want a Prime Minister who understands the importance of places like the West Midlands and the Black Country, one that sees the UK's route to growth is reliant on supporting us, investing in and bringing opportunity to our region." Mr. Parker said there were 3 specific commitments he would be looking for. The first would be greater financial autonomy, saying that tax revenues generated from growth in the West Midlands should be ploughed back into the area. "When this region delivers growth, the tax it generates goes straight to the Treasury, and we see almost none of it come back," he said. "That has to change. If we grow the economy, we should keep a share of the return and decide where it goes. Fiscal devolution would let us put the money where the need actually is." Mr. Parker said he would also be asking the government to devolve responsibility for further education and post-16 training to regional mayors, which he believed was crucial to improving the prospects of young people. He said he also wanted assurances that the boundaries of mayoral areas would be protected and not subject to frequent change as a result of local government reorganisation. Plea after body of baby is found, by Mimi Abraham. A baby has been found dead at an industrial site in Rowley Regis, prompting an urgent police appeal to find the infant's mother. The body of the baby girl was found in a warehouse in Station Road on Thursday. Police say it was believed the child was transported to the site the previous day, possibly from Shropshire. Inquiries, including forensic examinations, are now being carried out to identify the baby girl and find out how she died. West Midlands Police said officers wanted to make sure the mother of the baby got the care she urgently needed. Detective Chief Inspector Kylie Westlake from West Midlands Police's Public Protection Unit said, "While we don't know yet what has happened, what we do know is that there must be a mother out there who is in real need of help, and she is our absolute priority. We have been checking CCTV and speaking to hospitals, but it may be that the mother or someone who knows who she is sees this appeal. I really want to speak to her to make sure she's okay and to ensure she can get the help that she urgently needs." DCI Westlake added, "The baby was found within a waste pile which had been transported by a private waste operator to an industrial site in Station Road at just before midday. At this stage, we believe the baby was unknowingly transported on Wednesday. We understand the operator works across the West Midlands, Staffordshire, Warwickshire and West Mercia areas. We are not connecting the business to the sad death." we have set up a major incident public portal where anyone with information can submit anything they know directly to us. West Mercia Police also said the operator had been working in Telford and Bridgnorth. A force spokesman urged anyone with information to use the West Midlands Police portal via mip.police.uk/operation/20HQ26C08-P0-1. Shillen Sorry for Shocking Season by Lewis Cox. Chairman Shillen Patel has apologised to Albion fans and accepted responsibility for last season's failings that almost ended in Championship relegation. The Baggies secured their second tier status at the 11th hour thanks to a heroic run of 10 matches unbeaten, led by caretaker James Morrison, who was rewarded with a permanent head coach role. The struggle came as a result of failed head coach appointments of Ryan Mason and Eric Ramsey. A controversial late 2-point deduction for a breach of profit and sustainability regulations was also safely navigated by Morrison. Chairman Patel, who took over from Guo Chun Lai in February 2024, addressed supporters with an open letter and began by addressing a turbulent campaign. He wrote, "Last season was challenging and humbling, and I must begin here. I sincerely apologise to our supporters and everyone within and around the club for the extremely disappointing runs of form and other setbacks throughout what became a historically poor season. West Bromwich Albion's history, potential and support set a clear standard, and as chairman, I am ultimately responsible for meeting it. Last season, we fell far short, and I take full responsibility for that. I am also responsible for us doing much better in the future. In the end, we collectively pulled ourselves back from the worst of possibilities by showing our very best. It truly took every scrap of energy on the pitch and in the stands that we could muster, powered by belief and togetherness around the club and behind the scenes."
Hello, this is Jenny. I hope this finds you well and slightly cooler this week after the heatwave of last week. These articles are from the Express and Star newspaper, Monday, the 29th of June. "Cooking Up a Special Treat for Celebration," an article by Helen Dalloway, your world contributor. The Samuel Colleges were honoured by a royal representative and guests served a special lunch as they proudly hosted the FE Big Lunch to celebrate community partners. The King's representative, the Deputy Lieutenant Abby Valcalis, joined residents and staff from employer partner Mounsley Hall Care Village. They were among the guests treated to a special lunch at Cadbury Sixth Form College, one of the Sandwell Colleges, which involved delicious lemon drizzle and cheesecakes from the college's own cooking club. Students looked after the residents and fellow guests representing partner charities and organisations including St Basil's, King's Heath Community Centre, Space to Grow, The Sweet Project, Umbrella and West Midlands Police. The cooking club students received certificates from the Deputy Lieutenant for their culinary efforts. This significant moment also formed part of Volunteers Week and the Month of Community. CEO and Principal of the Samuel Colleges, Lisa Kappa, MBE, said, "This occasion was testament to our commitment to fostering community connections and celebrating the powerful partnership and collaboration across our colleges." Albion booking a pre-season Portugal date. Albion will send a week in Portugal's Algarve during pre-season, featuring a friendly open to supporters. James Morrison's men are jet-setting out to the country's southern region on Saturday, July the 11th, where they spend 7 days on a warm weather training camp. The trip will conclude in a friendly against English opposition League One New Boys Bromley. The clash is open to supporters. The friendly takes place at Estadio da Nora in Albufeira on Friday, July 17th, 7 p.m. kick-off local time. Ticketing details are still to be finalised. Estadio da Nora, located in Freiras, around 6 kilometres north of Albufeira, is the 2,000 capacity home of FC Freiras, who play in the lower Portuguese leagues. The trip and friendly is the final section of Albion's pre-season under Morrison confirmed. In total, there are 4 friendlies, 3 open to fans, including Bromley in Portugal, and 1 behind closed doors on July the 11th. Friendlies begin against Sheffield Wednesday at Burton St George's Park that day, not open to supporters. After the Bromley fixture, there is a trip to League Two's outfit Shrewsbury Town on July the 25th. The pre-season ends on August the 1st with a clash at League One side Peterborough. Church that has stood since 1883 to be turned into flats. An article by Christian Barnett, local Democracy reporter. A 143-year-old church will be converted into flats after plans receive the backing from council planners. The former Hallam Street Methodist Church in West Bromwich, which closed in 2020 during the COVID-19 pandemic, having sat on the corner of Hallam Street and Lewisham Street since at least 1883, would be divided and converted into two-storey, 2- and 3-bed flats. The church reopened in 2023, but closed in October last year. Clubs and exercise classes stopped a few months later. Several extensions to the main church would be demolished and replaced with a 4 4-bed terraced homes, the application by A.V. Singh said. Under previous proposals, the church would have been demolished and replaced with 6 new homes, which drew concerns from Samwell Council's planners and conservation officers over the loss of the building. Mr. Singh was advised to redraw the plans to reflect the building's character, saying the designs needed to be careful and sympathetic, and use as much of the existing material and architecture as possible. A statement included with the application said, "The site compromises previously developed land in a sustainable residential location, currently vacant and underutilised following the cessation of its previous use as a place of worship. The principal church building is considered to represent a non-designated heritage asset and makes a positive contribution to the character of the area. The proposed development has evolved discussions with local planning authority, which raised concerns regarding the loss of the church building under earlier redevelopment proposals. In response, the scheme has been fundamentally reconfigured to adopt a heritage-led approach." Woman dies after going into water. An article by Rob Smith. A 55-year-old woman has died after entering a pool at Samwell Valley Country Park. Emergency services had launched extensive efforts to rescue the woman from Swan Pool after 4:30 p.m. on Saturday, West Midlands Police said. West Midlands Fire Service sent crews including water rescue specialists. A spokesperson for the fire service said, "At 4:45 p.m. on Saturday, June 27th, West Midlands Fire Service were called to reports of a person in trouble in the water at Swan Pool, West Bromwich. Crews, including from our specialist water rescue firefighters at our technical rescue unit Handsworth, Tipton and West Bromwich fire stations attended, and the first crews were on the scene in around 5 minutes. Very sadly, despite the very best efforts of West Midlands Fire Service and our partners at West Midlands Police and West Midlands Ambulance Service, a 55-year-old woman died at the scene. Our thoughts are with the family and friends of the woman who died." A spokesperson for West Midlands Police said, Sadly, nothing could be done to save her and she was confirmed deceased at the scene. Our thoughts are with her family at this tragic time. Her death is not being treated as suspicious at this time and we will be liaising with the coroner. At least five other people have died after entering water in the UK during this week's heatwave, including Brodie Leach, a 22-year-old man whose body was recovered in the early hours of Saturday after he got into difficulty in the River Severn in Shrewsbury.
Hi, this is Kate and I'm reading you some articles from the Express and Star dated the 30th of June, walk-in service providing free financial and housing advice. A new free advice service has launched in Smethwick to provide Sandwell residents with confidential support on a wide range of financial, housing and welfare issues. The Smethwick Advice Centre, based in the library on High Street, brings together experienced advisers from Sandwell Council alongside local voluntary and community organisations, making it easier for people to access support in one place. The walk-in service is available every Wednesday from 9:30 a.m. till 2 p.m. with no appointment needed. Residents can receive advice on issues including benefits, debt, housing, immigration, education and employment, consumer rights, energy debt and utility bills, rent arrears, mortgage rescue, charity and grant applications, digital support, as well as referrals to specialist services. The initiative has been created to simplify access to support, allowing residents to receive advice and be directed to the most appropriate services without having to contact multiple organisations. Councillor Gary Dale, Sandwell Councillors Cabinet Member for Finance and Corporate Services, said, "Helping people with the cost of living is one of our priorities, and we know that many residents face a range of challenges that can affect their finances, housing and well-being. The Smethwick Advice Centre brings together advice and support services in one place, making it easier for people to get the help that they need. Bus driver gathers a wave of support for air conditioning petition. A bus driver who launched a petition to make air conditioning mandatory on UK public transport has urged supporters to keep pushing despite the cooler weather. Gavin Hall of West Bromwich launched the petition after struggling to cope under strenuous conditions during the rare red weather warning for extreme heat that covered parts of the UK last week. Many businesses, schools and public services were either closed or operating alternative hours due to the weather conditions. But many people had to work as usual, including bus drivers like Gavin, who is calling on support from the public to make aircon mandatory on UK buses as he feels the weather is impacting driver safety and comfort. The petition has now gained more than 1,900 signatures since it launched. But now temperatures have cooled, Gavin has urged his supporters to keep pushing and think of the future. In a message to supporters after receiving 1,000 signatures, Gavin wrote, "Thank you so much for your support. We need to keep pushing and sharing and keep it moving. It may lose a little traction now the weather is set to cool, but I think about the next heat wave and it's better to be ready for it. Thanks again for supporting this cause." National Express West Midlands claimed that some of his buses do have air conditioning already, but if extreme heat became the norm in the UK, fitting them in all buses may be reviewed. Ministers hails Milestone College Health Skills Hub. Skills Minister Jackie Smith was the guest of honour at the official launch of Sandwell College's cutting-edge new healthcare skills hub at the Learning Campus in Smethwick. Located next to the Midland Metropolitan Hospital and developed in partnership with Sandwell and West Birmingham NHS Trust, the state-of-the-art campus, funded by the Government Towns Funds, provides expert-led training in health and social care delivered by Sandwell College. CEO and Principal of Sandwell College, Lisa Kappa, MBE, opened the launch event on June the 26th with Baroness Smith of Malvern, delivering a keynote speech. She said, "This learning campus is a fantastic partnership between Sandwell College and the Midland Met Hospital and the NHS Trust with other universities. What I've been able to see is that young people getting that chance to start on a pathway that's going to take them into employment in our health services and in social care, where obviously we need to find the skills and people who can fill those roles in the future. Mayor of the West Midlands, Richard Parker, was also a guest. He said, "My biggest priority is helping as many young people as possible to get access to the skills that can lead to good, well-paid jobs." And this article is supported by a photograph of the Minister, Jackie Smith, at the launch. And she's standing next to Mayor of the West Midlands, Richard Parker, and there's some other guests, and they all look like young people who are probably studying at the campus. Ribbon Cut on Room, offering free space for the community. The Mayor of Sandwell helped to launch a new room opened by the Building Society to offer a free space for the community. West Bromwich Building Society celebrated the launch of its new community room at its Cape Hill branch in West Bromwich, marking the occasion with a joint event alongside the National Literacy Trust as part of its National Year of Reading celebrations. The free-to-use space has been created to give local groups, organisations and residents a welcoming place to meet, connect and host activities, supporting the Society's ongoing commitment to bringing communities together in its heartlands. The official launch event brought together partners and local organisations with the Natural Literacy Host, hosting a special lunch in the space for its Literacy Champion volunteers. The event also featured a ribbon cutting ceremony attended by Mayor Councillor Margaret Sutton, Pam Upple, Senior Branch Manager at West Bromwich's Building Society, Cape Hill Branch, said, "We're incredibly pleased to open our community room and to welcome so many fantastic organisations through our doors for the launch. These spaces are about creating opportunities for people to come together, share ideas and build stronger local connections. All rooms are available free of charge for local groups, clubs and societies to host meetings, activities and events." Aman Danda, manager for the Natural Literacy Trust in the Black Country, said, "Working with literacy champions and local partners is key to delivering fun, inclusive and impactful initiatives that respond directly to literacy needs across the Black Country. Community spaces within familiar and trusted organisations create valuable opportunities for connection and collaboration." And this article is supported by a photograph of the ribbon cutting with the Mayor of Sandwell, Councillor Margaret Sutton, cutting the ribbon to open the door. The red ribbon, which is put across the opening of the door from left to right, it's a red ribbon and she's got a red pair of scissors and she's standing there with a couple of people from the Building Society. Stupid burglar wearing a GPS tag while breaking into homes is jailed. A stupid burglar wearing a GPS tag was part of a group breaking into Black Country houses in the middle of the night seeking cannabis farms. John Nomikos, who was on licence after being released from prison a month earlier when he claimed he acted as a lookout for a group of men who broke into three addresses in Dudley, Albury and Tipton in December 2024 and January 2025, leaving the families terrified. He was sentenced after admitting three counts of burglary. On June the 26th, Wolverhampton Crown Court, sitting at Telford Magistrates Court, heard the 24-year-old blame financial hardship for his participation in the crimes, which saw several masked men enter homes with weapons. On December the 12th, they entered the house at 12:30 a.m. in McKean Road, Albury, where the householder shouted at them to leave, and they did. On January the 7th, they went to a property off Paris Avenue, Tipton, at 4:50 a.m. The court heard that when they were told to leave, one of the group grabbed the female householder by the hair and hit her before fleeing. On January the 27th, the group went into another house in the Broadway, Dudley, where a family were asleep. The court heard he had three previous convictions for eight offences. He was jailed for 3 years in 2024 for burglary and vehicle theft and was on licence for those offences when he committed the latest burglaries. Josh Radcliffe, mitigating, said the Nomicos of Darlaston Road, Wensbury, had been stupid as it was fitted with a GPS tag. Recorder John Freeman jailed Nomicos for 3 years and 7 months to begin consecutive to the completion of the 2024 sentence. He said, I hope you continue to take courses in prison and can find some useful training and employment in the future.
Welcome back to the Express and Star Pub Quiz. News, question one. Sir Keir Starmer's resignation means the UK is set to have had how many prime ministers in the past 10 years? Question 2. What forced hundreds of schools across England and Wales to close last week? Question 3. Scotland football fan Chris Nicol received a telling off from police in Miami after he tried to crown a statue of the Spanish explorer Juan Ponce de Leon with what? Sport, question 4. In which year did Lionel Messi make his international debut? Question 5. Sally Gunnell won Olympic track gold at Barcelona in 1992 in which event? Question 6. What is the nickname of darts player Gary Anderson? Remember when? Question 7. Beatlemania and the British invasion of popular music hit America. Ian Fleming died. Tokyo hosted the Summer Olympics, making it the first Olympics to be hosted in Asia, and Ian Smith became PM of South Rhodesia. But what was the year? Who am I? Question 8. A 1980s teen idol, I was born in California in 1971. I famously filed for legal emancipation from my mother and manager at the height of my career in 1988. My biggest selling pop hit was I Think We're Alone Now the previous year. In 2005, I appeared on the British TV show Hit Me Baby One More Time. But who am I? Question 9. An entrepreneur, I was born in Staffordshire in 1730. I am the grandfather of the naturalist Charles Darwin. I came from a family of potters, but smallpox left me unable to work a potter's wheel and led to the amputation of my leg. I focused instead on pottery design, and the company I created is still named after me today. But who am I? Local knowledge. Question 10. Which Edgbaston woman, born in 1932, simultaneously held 3 world records in roller speed skating in 1952, won 10 British championship medals, and was among the first women ever to represent Great Britain at the World Roller Speed Skating Championships? How's your knowledge in this week's quiz? Click to the answers to find out. Here are the answers for this week's quiz. News, question 1. Sir Keir Starmer's resignation means the UK is set to have had how many prime ministers in the past 10 years? 6. Question 2. What forced hundreds of schools across England and Wales to close last week? The heat wave. Question 3. Scotland football fan Chris Nicol received a telling off from police in Miami after he tried to crown a statue of the Spanish explorer Juan Ponce de Leon with what? A traffic cone. Sport, question 4. In which year did Lionel Messi make his international debut? 2005. Question 5. Sally Gunnell won Olympic track gold at Barcelona in 1992 in which event? The 400-metre hurdles. Question 6. What is the nickname of darts player Gary Anderson? The Flying Scotsman. Remember when? Question 7. Beatlemania and the British invasion of popular music hit America. Ian Fleming died. Tokyo hosted the Summer Olympics, making it the first Olympics to be hosted in Asia, and Ian Smith became PM of South Rhodesia. But what was the year? 1964. Who am I? Question 8. A 1980s teen idol, I was born in California in 1971. I famously filed for legal emancipation from my mother and manager at the height of my career in 1988. My biggest selling pop hit was I Think We're Alone Now the previous year. In 2005, I appeared on the British TV show Hit Me Baby One More Time. But who am I? Tiffany! Question 9. An entrepreneur, I was born in Staffordshire in 1730. I am the grandfather of the naturalist Charles Darwin. I came from a family of potters, but smallpox left me unable to work a potter's wheel and led to the amputation of my leg. I focused instead on pottery design, and the company I created is still named after me today. But who am I? Josiah Wedgwood. Local knowledge. Question 10. Which Edgbaston woman, born in 1932, simultaneously held 3 world records in roller speed skating in 1952, won 10 British championship medals, and was among the first women ever to represent Great Britain at the World Roller Speed Skating Championships? Pat Kirkham, aged 94 and still living in Birmingham. Thanks for joining me in this week's quiz. I'm Sarah Ann and I'll be back next time. Bye!
Some audio described TV programmes for the next week along with radio programme highlights from Talking News Federation. Search for publications TNF Soundings to hear these directly on their website.
TNF Soundings.
Hello, this is Val from Wharfdale Talking News with my selection of audio-described TV programmes for the period Saturday the 4th to Friday the 10th of July 2026. Coverage of the Football World Cup and Wimbledon continues, and as mentioned last week, these events will probably affect the programme schedules on BBC One, BBC Two and ITV One. As live coverage will include extra time, and because it is still not known at this time which channels will cover which matches. Also, some of the programmes I have listed for these channels may not happen because of this uncertainty. This week's listings in the Radio Times also do not show any of the matches being audio described, so you will have to rely on the commentary to give you an idea of the action. So having said all that, let's get started with Saturday the 4th of July. The daytime schedules are taken up with mainly Wimbledon on the BBC channels. And also on ITV1 there is live coverage of Nations Championship Rugby Union, though not audio described, starting with New Zealand versus France, kick-off 10 past 8, Australia versus Ireland, kick-off 11:10 a.m. and Fiji versus Wales, kick-off 2:10 p.m. Today's daytime programmes on Channel 4 start with a double bill of The Simpsons at 10 a.m, Narrow Escapes featuring the maintenance work of the Canal and River Trust at 1 p.m, followed by Chateau DIY at 2 p.m. There are four episodes of Midsummer Murders on ITV3 today at 2 p.m, 4 p.m, 6 p.m, and 8 p.m. Coverage of World Cup Match of the Day Live is at 5:30 p.m, and another World Cup match starts at 10 p.m. tonight. Two films on Channel 4 tonight. At 6:30 p.m, the Oscar-winning blockbuster Titanic, followed at 10:15 p.m. by a sci-fi thriller, The Creator. The story of Captain James Cook's historic 1768 voyage is the subject of the documentary series Voyages of Discovery. The Making of Captain Cook is on BBC Four at 8 p.m. The film Downton Abbey, A New Era, is the late film on ITV One at 10:45 p.m. On to Sunday, the 5th of July. Sunday with Laura Koonsberg, featuring interviews with politicians and key public figures, is on BBC One at 9 a.m. Alan Titchmarsh and his green-fingered experts head to Essex in Love Your Garden on ITV One at 12:35 p.m. The afternoon film on ITV One at 3:15 is the spy adventure You Only Live Twice, starring Sean Connery as James Bond. We revisit a couple from Croydon who have disagreed over the future of their unusual bungalow for the best part of a decade. Kirsty and Phil's Love It or List It, Brilliant Builds, is on Channel 4 at 6 p.m. Another chance to see how celebrities recreate their hometowns in show-stopping biscuit form in The Great Celebrity Bake Off for Stand Up to Cancer on Channel 4 at 7 p.m. The Agatha Christie mystery Murder on the Orient Express, starring Kenneth Branagh as Hercule Poirot, is tonight's film on Channel 4 at 8 p.m. Today's World Cup matches kick off at 9 p.m. and 1 a.m. Here are those programmes which are on at the same time throughout the week. On BBC One, a new series of Expert Witness starts at 10:45 a.m. Monday to Friday. Homes Under the Hammer is at 11:15 and Bargain Hunt is at 12:15 each day apart from Wednesday. On BBC One, live coverage of the tennis at Wimbledon starts at about 12:30 on Saturday and Sunday and continues throughout the week at 2 p.m, apart from an earlier start at 11:15 a.m. on Wednesday. Over on BBC Two, live coverage starts at 11 a.m. each day, apart from a later start at 1 p.m. on Wednesday. Although not audio described, the commentary should give you an idea of the action. And by the way, the tennis schedules could be changed depending on live coverage of the World Cup. On ITV One, Dickinson's Real Deal is only on Monday to Wednesday this week at 2 p.m. Monday and Wednesday and 2:15 on Tuesday. On Channel 4, there are four episodes of the sitcom Frasier starting at 9:10 each morning, Monday to Friday. On ITV 3, there are two episodes of Heartbeat starting at 5:50 and 6:55 p.m. Monday to Friday. Now for the soaps. EastEnders will be on BBC One at 7 p.m. on Monday and on BBC Two at 7:30 p.m. Tuesday to Thursday. On ITV One, Emmerdale will be at 7:15 on Sunday and at 8 p.m. Wednesday to Friday. Coronation Street will be at 7:45 p.m. on Sunday and 8:30 on Wednesday and 9 p.m. Thursday and Friday. Now for Monday, 6th of July. Insurance investigator Catherine Zeta-Jones sets out to catch master thief Sean Connery in the romantic thriller Entrapment on Film 4 at 6:45 p.m. Port of Dover police investigate organised car theft gangs and a yacht disappears in treacherous seas. Dover 24/7, Britain's busiest port, is on Channel 4 at 8 p.m. While we glug down millions of cups each year, how many of us know where our tea actually comes from? Find out as the adventurer heads to East Africa to uncover the secrets behind the UK's favourite drink. The Tea Trail with Simon Reeve is on BBC Four at 8 p.m. The historian examines the Doomsday Book and the Bayeux Tapestry to discover how William the Conqueror beat King Harold at the Battle of Hastings. 1066, Lucy Worsley Investigates is on BBC Two at 9 p.m. A new drama, Lie With Me, starts on Channel 5 tonight at 9 p.m. British woman Anna and her Australian husband Jake move to Melbourne with their children for a fresh start, where they hire a nanny, who isn't all she appears to be. Continues each evening until Thursday. Today's World Cup matches kick off at 8 p.m. and 1 a.m. On to Tuesday, the 7th of July. Today's World Cup matches kick off at 5 p.m. and 9 p.m. The comedy drama about the singing Cornish fisher folk is the early evening film on Film 4 at 6:50 p.m. In tonight's episode of Bake Off the Professionals on Channel 4 at 8 p.m, the six remaining teams compete for a quarter-final spot, with the senior development chef at Waitrose setting the pairs a retail product challenge. The death of a pensioner takes DCI Stanhope to a coastal town, but she faces a wall of silence from the residents. Vera is on ITV3 at 8 p.m. In this repeat of Grand Designs on Channel 4 at 9 p.m, Kevin MacLeod celebrates the 25th anniversary by revisiting the show's first ever project. In tonight's final episode of the documentary series The American Revolution on BBC Four at 10 p.m, the British Army under General Cornwallis struggles to pacify the southern state. Wednesday, the 8th of July. A 1940s drum kit is brought into the repair shop at 8 p.m. on BBC Two. A doctor and paramedic are dispatched to treat a woman who has suffered a cardiac arrest while driving. Ambulance Code Red is on Channel 5 at 8 p.m. Professor Brian Cox looks at the discoveries we have made to understanding how the universe came to be. Universe, The Big Bang Before the Dawn is on BBC Four at 8 p.m. Time for another visit to the Caribbean. When a pop singer is found dead at a rehab clinic, it looks like an accident, but Neville thinks there's more here than meets the eye. Death in Paradise is on BBC One at 9 p.m. A former financial trader looks at the growing wealth gap, including why he thinks it is the root of many of the UK's social and economic problems, and what he proposes we do about it. How to Get Filthy Rich with Gary Stevenson is on Channel 4 at 9 p.m. Mark Evans tracks the exploits of more landlocked homeowners building a life in stunning aquatic homes. The new series My Floating Home starts on More 4 at 9 p.m. The late-night film on BBC One at 10:40 p.m. is the sci-fi thriller War of the Worlds, based on the H.G. Wells 1898 novel. On to Thursday, the 9th of July. The architect meets James, who has a budget of £500,000 to restore a former glassworks property. George Clark's Remarkable Renovations is on Channel 4 at 8 p.m. A new series of the Marlowe Murder Club starts tonight on the U and Drama Channel at 8 p.m. In the first episode of this two-parter, Judith Potts's evening is shattered when she witnesses her neighbour's murder. Today's World Cup match, the first quarter-final, kicks off at 9 p.m. A drama documentary telling the story of Gordon Welchman, one of the elite team of codebreakers who proved critical to the Allied war effort, is the subject of Bletchley Park, Codebreaking's Forgotten Genius, on BBC Four at 9 p.m. Barrister Webster has something on his conscience he wants to confess to his carer before he dies. Find out more in How Do You Plead? From Series 6 of Inside Number 9 on BBC Two at 10 p.m. And so we come to Friday, the 10th of July. Our Lives, Ashington AFC, Saving Our Club on BBC One at 7 p.m. tells us about a group of volunteers who aim to keep their Northumberland Football Club afloat. Today's World Cup match, the second quarter-final, kicks off at 8 p.m. The Owens prepare for Clive's 70th birthday in our farm next door, Amanda, Clive and Kids, on Channel 4 at 8 p.m. More famous faces sit down to give their thoughts on the week's TV in Celebrity Gogglebox on Channel 4 at 9 p.m. The comedy drama Austin, starring Ben Miller and Sally Phillips, returns for a new series tonight on BBC One at 10 past 11. In the first episode, DNA test results reveal that Julian isn't Austin's father after all. The second episode follows at 11:40 p.m. We have two films to end the week. The crime thriller Jack Reacher, starring Tom Cruise and Rosamund Pike, on ITV1 at 10:45, and the period romantic drama Atonement on BBC Two at 12:05. Well, that's all for this week, and next time you hear me doing the TV listings, I think the World Cup will be over, and I hope there will be more choice for you.
TNF Soundings.
Hello, I'm David, and I'm bringing you some radio highlights for this coming week that I hope you will enjoy listening to in the days ahead. First of all, Saturday the 4th of July. Today's vintage comedy is Brothers-in-Law, a legal sitcom from 1970, starring Richard Briers and John Le Mesurier. On Radio 4 Extra at 9:30 a.m, repeated at 2:30 p.m. and 8:30 p.m. Radio 3's Essential History of Classical Music explores Johann Sebastian Bach's The Well-Tempered Clavier on Radio 3 at 1 p.m. And Radio 2 brings you Madonna and Graham, where Graham Norton and Madonna have an intimate and in-depth chat, and that's on Radio 2 at 6 p.m. Opera on 3 today is Bizet's Les Pêcheurs de Perles, or The Pearl Fishers, and you'll find that on Radio 3 at 6 p.m. And we couldn't pass over the 4th of July without something American. James Naughtie looks at how Americans celebrate the anniversary of the Declaration of Independence in Archive on 4, Born on the 4th of July, and that's on Radio 4 at 8 p.m. And Radio 4 brings you a comedy set in an Ulster parish council meeting in Parish Matters, Don't Come Crying to Me When the Robots Take Over. And that's on Radio 4 at 11 p.m. And then for Sunday, the 5th of July, Sunday worship this morning comes from Hereford Cathedral on Radio 4 at 8:10 in the morning. Classic comedy today is a 1955 episode of Take It From Here on Radio 4 Extra at 10:30 a.m, repeated at 3 p.m. and 9:30 p.m. Lauren Laverne's guest on Desert Island Discs today is the glaciologist Professor Liz Morris, and you can find that on Radio 4 at 10 a.m, repeated on Friday at 9 a.m. Radio 4 brings you the 1921 American play Anna Christie by Eugene O'Neill, and that's on Radio 4 at 3 p.m. And Desert Island Discs Revisited, Dame Ellen MacArthur talks to Kirsty Young about her solo circumnavigation of the globe, and that's on Radio 4 Extra at 5 p.m. And a further musical celebration of American independence is the Sunday feature A Musical Evening at Monticello on Radio 3 at 7 p.m. In Later Life Letter, poet Luke Wright considers the letters written by social workers telling adopted children about their birth families, including his own experiences. And that's on Radio 4 at 7:15 p.m. And now for some programmes that are broadcast each weekday at the same time. Book of the Week this week is On Thin Ice, a memoir of Siberia, surveillance and survival by explorer and travel writer Charlie Walker. And that's on Radio 4 each day at 11:45 a.m. And then episodes 6 to 10 of 10 Fights That Made the Green Movement is on Radio 4 each day at 1:45 p.m. Radio 3's Composer of the Week this week is Fela Saunedi, the late Nigerian composer. And that's on Radio 3 each afternoon at 4 p.m. The essay Call of the Wild is on Radio 3 at 9:45 each evening. Operation Rex is a story of one boy's challenges that he faced in keeping his pet at the beginning of the Second World War. And that's on Radio 4 each evening at 10:45 p.m. Then Monday, the 6th of July, today's vintage comedy is a 1976 episode of Dad's Army. Radio 4 Extra at 7:30 a.m. repeated 12:30 p.m. and 6:30 p.m. In Reflections, James Naughtie talks to Jerry Brown, the former governor of California, on Radio 4 at 9:30 a.m. Classical Live on Radio 3 shines the spotlight on orchestras due to appear in this year's proms. Classical Live is on Radio 3 at 1 p.m. Radio 4 addresses the problem of artificial intelligence being used by students in place of building their argument in essays in the Artificial University on Radio 4 at 4 p.m. And Radio 3 in Concert today brings you Bach's Mass in B minor with the BBC Singers on Radio 3 at 7:30 p.m. Tuesday, the 7th of July, a 1958 episode of The Goon Show is today's vintage comedy. Radio 4 Extra at 7:30 a.m. repeated at 12:30 and 6:30 p.m. People Fixing the World is a programme about helping aspiring entrepreneurs to bring their ideas to life. And that's on the BBC World Service at 8:05 in the morning, repeated at 3:05 and 10:05 this afternoon and this evening. The Art of Isolation, Hikikomori Stories, exploring the world of socially isolated people on Radio 4 at 4 p.m. Radio 3 in Concert Day is a performance of Mahler's epic Resurrection Symphony, and that's on Radio 3 at 7:30 p.m. To Catch a King follows an investigation into catching people smugglers on Radio 4 at 9 p.m. Wednesday, the 8th of July, Hancock's Half Hour is today's vintage comedy from 1955. Radio 4 Extra at 7:30 a.m., 12:30 and 6:30 p.m. The Odyssey, a dramatisation of Homer's epic tale, is on Radio 4 Extra at 2:30 p.m. and 8:30 p.m. Choral Evensong on Radio 3 comes from the Parish Church of St John at Hampstead in London, and you can find that on Radio 3 at 3 p.m. Radio 3 in Concert tonight brings you a recorded performance of Monteverdi's Vespers of 1610, and that's on Radio 3 at 7:30 p.m. And then Thursday, the 9th of July, I'm Sorry, I'll Read That Again brings you a 1965 comedy episode at 7:30 a.m. and 12:30 and 6:30 p.m. on Radio 4 Extra. Who Do You Think We Were? National Remembrance of the 1924 Empire Exhibition, a series marking the 75th anniversary of the 1951 Festival of Britain, on Radio 4 at 9 a.m. In a new series of This Natural Life, Dame Judi Dench takes you on a tour of her woodland garden in Surrey. on Radio 4 at 3 p.m. And Radio 3 in concert this evening comes from York Minster in a concert devoted to Spanish choral music from the Renaissance. That's on Radio 3 at 7:30 p.m. And then Friday, the 10th of July. Today's vintage comedy is a 1976 episode of Steptoe and Son. Radio 4 Extra at 7:30 a.m, 12:30 and 6:30 p.m. And Desert Island Discs today brings you a repeat of last Sunday's episode with Professor Liz Morris on Radio 4 at 9 a.m. Heart and Soul brings you the account of a Japanese man who lost his wife in the 2011 tsunami and who dives into the waters of Onagawa Bay twice a day in tribute to her. Heart and Soul is on BBC World Service at 1:30 p.m, repeated at 10:30 p.m. Limelight Central Intelligence is a drama about the CIA in 1964, as President Johnson fears that the communists might win the elections in Chile. Limelight Central Intelligence is on Radio 4 at 2:15 p.m. Friday night is Music Night, brings you a concert celebrating 75 years of the iconic BBC drama The Archers. And that's on Radio 3 at 7:30 p.m. And that concludes my selection for this week. I do hope you have found it both helpful and entertaining.
TNS Soundings.
Hello, this is Amanda with an article by Fiona on how to tackle youth unemployment in the visually impaired community. The Royal National Institute of Blind People, RNIB, has spoken out on behalf of visually impaired young people. This follows a government report highlighting the number of 16 to 24-year-olds in the UK who are not in employment, education or training. The newly published report began life at the end of last year. In November, former government minister, the Right Honourable Alan Milburn, was asked by Prime Minister Sir Keir Starmer to look at why 1 million 16 to 24-year-olds in the UK were not in education, employment or training, a status abbreviated to NEET, N-E-E-T. Roisin Jacqueline, RNIB's policy lead, said, "Young people with a vision impairment tell us that they often aren't getting the right level of specialist support at school or college. That sets them back even before they start looking for work. We know the consequences can be severe, with young people with vision impairment twice as likely not to be in education, employment or training as their peers." In an interim report entitled Young People at Work, published this summer, the former Secretary of State for Health and Social Care, Alan Milburn, said, "A rising tide of mental ill health, anxiety, depression and neurodiversity is a central driver of economic inactivity among young people." He added, "I start from a simple proposition. Every young person has something to give, a skill, an aptitude, a potential. No young person should be written off because of where they start in life, the family they are born into, the school they attend, the health condition they have, or the barriers they face." Mr. Milburn concluded the report saying it will involve two phases. The discovery phase, which will focus on providing a diagnosis on the increase in the number of young disabled people and those with a health condition who are NEET. The second phase, a solution phase, will explore and identify potential areas for reform. Building on the interim report, the RNIB have highlighted steps that can be taken to make sure visually impaired NEETs are fully included in government's planned changes. The day after the report was published, the RNIB's Roisin Jacqueline said, "What we need is a multi-pronged approach. These are young people who want to work just like anyone else, but too often graduate recruitment schemes or apprenticeships don't think about accessibility when designing their recruitment processes. Imagine trying to upload your CV to a website that doesn't work with assistive technology, or to persuade an employer of your skills when they hold outdated ideas about what someone with sight loss is capable of with the right technology and workplace support. And once in work, it's critical that the government's Access to Work scheme, designed to get disabled people into work, functions properly. We need action to tackle long waiting lists and wrongly applied rules, curbing support packages which can make all the difference to whether young people thrive or feel excluded as they embark on their careers. The government's Access to Work scheme is at https://www.gov.uk/access-to-work, all lowercase.
TNF Soundings.
One of the poems in my book is about the fuss over not you're not supposed to speak in dialect. And judging by the way I said, does anybody speak dialects? And a couple of people put their hands up very sheepishly. We're not proud enough of our dialect. And I know there was a lot of fuss in the news about children being told they mustn't speak in dialect at school. But I spoke to a bloke who was a granddad, and he said his wife had said, do not talk to the grandchildren using dialect. And I think that's a real shame, because there's no reason why dialect actually shouldn't be the proper language. And the alternative is the way people generally speak. It's a legitimate language, and we should be using it and celebrating it and learning it, I think. So this poem is thinking about that. It's on this page in the book. There's a couple of pictures of my little brother, who was very cute then. He's not so cute now. So he's one of them in the yard, next to the brick wall, and he's playing with an old teapot. He's only little. And the other one of him standing, looking quite smart, standing in the road next to my mum's white minivan. And there's actually a bit of a bend in the photograph. You can see a line down it. Now, with modern technology, you can take those out, but I left it in because I just think it's got a lot of charm. So this is called English Lesson. Watched rhymes we catched, but catched a word, according to our teacher. It ought to be caught, and watch rhymes we botch, and waiter don't rhyme with tater. I ought to say water when I'm at school, and potato rhymes with yo. I call say I call, I won't say I wall, I shouldn't say dough, so I dough. How confusing, eh? I do like having fun with dialect. This one is for anybody who isn't from the Black Country to explain what the word day means. It's called day. I thought the sun would shine today, bright day. I thought I'd have more time today, but a day. I thought they'd wipe out crime today, but the day. I thought I'd write one more line today. You guessed it, a day. That's the end of the poem. And there's a very silly one in here as well. And a lovely picture of me and my little brother. My mum trained as a nurse until she got married to my dad, and then she had to give it up, as you had to in those days. And it's such a shame, she would have made a really good nurse. So when I was a little girl, I wanted to be a nurse, or a nuss, in Black Country speak. So in this picture, I'm standing in the yard, but it's a colour picture, so you've got the lovely red of the brick, you've got even the concrete border looks nice. There's some hydrangeas, pink hydrangeas, and a few pots with flowers in. It's lovely. So I'm in a nurse's outfit, and my little brother, who can't be, he probably isn't even two, he's in a doctor's outfit. He's sucking his thumb, and he's wearing a doctor's outfit. So this is a very silly poem. I shall do it a couple of times, actually, just to demonstrate how lovely dialect is. It's called Being Nice to the Nuss. Now, I don't make a fuss when I see the fuss nuss, because a fuss could have made matters worse. Now, would I make a fuss? Would I cause the fuss? No, so am I to done somewhat much wussera. Did you get that? So if I was to do that in standard English, it would be being nice to the nurse. Now, I didn't make a fuss when I saw the first nurse because a fuss could have made matters worse. No, I didn't make a fuss. I didn't curse the first nurse, or she might have done something much worse. Now, that's not much of a poem, is it? So, Black Country dialect, being nice to the nurse. Now, I don't make a fuss when I see the fuss nurse, because a fuss could have made matters worse. Now, I don't make a fuss, so they cost the fuss nurse, or I might have done something much wussera. And I love that word, wussera. You got wuss, wusser, and wussera. And I don't think there's a wussera any more than that, but anyway. So I'm going to pause there before I do something quite different to ask if anybody's got any questions.
Are you a pal of Billy Speightman? Do you perform together?
I have performed together with Billy, and not for a long time. He and I and Dave Reeves, who you probably... Did you know Dave Reeves?
Unfortunately,
he died a few years ago. He was just an amazing Black Country poet and writer. We performed at the Cone in Stourbridge, actually. I think that might have been... No, tell a lie. The last time I performed on the same stage as Billy was at Great Bridge Library. And in fact, I'm going on his radio show. It should be on this coming weekend.
That's Black Country Omer and Chain. Radio.
Yeah, Black Country Radio. It's called Omer and Chain. It's on Sunday afternoon. Not quite sure what time. Amazing bloke, Billy Speightman.
I bumped into Billy O'Brien at the Russell Hall Hospital. He's raising money for the cancer unit there. So yeah. I stood by him for half an hour with my guide dog, see if it would increase his income.
And did it?
No, because he stopped singing and was chatting. So I said, I'll bid him good afternoon. And I left him there singing and banging his tambourine.
He does a lot of charity work, doesn't he?
Get his foot on his cap.
His what?
Yeah, his foot on his cap.
His foot on his cap.
Where the money went.
Yeah.
He's actually raising funds for us this year, him and the Musketeers. They are raising, we're one of their charities.
Anybody else got a question or a comment?
She was one of the posh houses with the facilities inside. Would you just go across the yard?
It wasn't posh at all, no. It was the same as anybody else's. The coupage was the back. I suppose we were posher than some people because we got a family firm, whereas going back a little bit before I was born, they'd all be chain shops. A lot of the other houses would be chain shops where a lot of women, actually, as well as the men, would make chain in their own yard. But no, it was just an ordinary terraced house with a little yard at the back, a tiny yard, coal hole.
Inside toilet.
I'll tell you what, it was a cross between an inside and an outside toilet, because it was outside when it was built, but they put a sort of cover between the house and the toilet, so you could actually go through, but it was still blinking cold out there, and we used Isle toilet roll, that shiny stuff.
You were posh.
No, we did have Isle, yeah.
A bathroom. Or did you use a tin bath?
No, we didn't. No, we'd got a long room which was over the entry that had a bath in it. And then we had a bathroom built. So yeah, you're making me think of, yeah, I'm John Posh.
I think it's interesting, coming from our working schools, I think there has been a massive decline in sort of the use of like local dialect. I go really broad when I'm with my dad, when I'm with my nan I'm terrible, and my husband winces because he's a Brummer. But I think since there's been more of a focus on sort of standards and education, so like the written word, for example, we always found it was like, as a teacher, when I was teaching, we were always told to speak very sort of in a standard dialect because it's difficult for children to blend phonically and to get their words out if they weren't pronouncing them correctly. Yeah. And I can see it from both sides, but I feel that since there's been more of a push sort of unwritten education, there's definitely been a drop in sort of the spoken accent, and I think I'm with you. I think it's a real shame.
I think it'd be nice if it was actually taught in schools, because it is a proper language. But I'm, you know, the challenges teachers face is just immense. So yeah, it's just one of those things. But I think dialects is something to be celebrated, and you know, if a child has got a grandparent that speaks dialect, they should be encouraged to listen to them, and you know, so we can keep the dialect alive, because it is dying. I mean, the these and thous you don't get now, do you?
But, yeah. I presume it must be hard now, because you've got children, I presume, with many different languages, haven't you? So that must actually go against Black Country dialect being taught, doesn't it?
I don't know whether we were ever at a point where it was taught. I think it was more sort of randomly used, and I think a lot of it will depend on sort of the location of the school. But you're right. I mean, I work not too far from here, I've walked down, but like in our school, I think we're at 43, 44 different languages on site. Yeah. So if you're dealing with that as a basic, and that's quite normal, really, to then, if you're teaching those children, lots of new arrivals, English, standard English, to then introduce another thing can be tricky. That it's definitely when they get it, though, when you've got children who speak alternative languages and you're hearing a bit of Black Country coming through in their accent, it makes my whole really smile when they say things. But
well, maybe, if schools celebrated International Mother Language Day, I can't remember exactly when it is, but it's an annual thing, and so that every child has got an opportunity to just say something in their own natural language, then it celebrates it rather than making it a problem.
Absolutely.
And also, when we celebrate other cultures, we should also be celebrating our own.
Yeah.
But I think the emphasis is on looking at other cultures of people who've come to live here, rather than, you know, the Black Country culture. It's a shame.
Yeah, the Black Country's got a strong culture.
But not enough is said about the Black Country and the renaissance of the Black Country heritage. And, you know, the dialect is part of that. You know, I mean, you hear even doctors like Dr. Carl Chin talking with his dialect, right? And I think it's amazing, you know, that we are losing a part of our heritage. You know, it is sad. Yeah, and I think we need to celebrate all forms of diverse linguistic backgrounds.
Mm-hmm. Definitely,
TNF Soundings. Features from across the UK.
This is Jan with some ideas from the gardening expert at the MK Pulse magazine based in Milton Keynes. Here's a controversial thing. If they aren't interfering with your best garden displays, would you consider letting gastropods live free in your garden? Slugs and snails have long been treated with contempt by green-fingered types, but things are changing. The Royal Horticultural Society has had a rethink regarding slugs and snails, and they are no longer classed as pests. Instead, they will be promoted as a positive part of a garden's ecosystem. And rightly so. Those great big slugs that take our attention as they slowly slide around our outside spaces actually munch their way through dead and decaying plant material and other debris. You might want to think of them as important mini compost machines. Aside from clearing the old plants, they are predated on by other garden residents who are themselves struggling to survive. Hedgehog numbers are declining, so too are many of our garden bird species, and both are partial to slugs and snails. Frogs and toads gobble them up too. Slugs have their place in our outside spaces, and so too do snails. It is also a misconception to think that all snails and slugs attack your green stuff. But of course there are a proportion that do, and if your cabbages have been catastrophically munched or your blooms devoured, it can be devastating, especially after so much hard work has gone into growing them. A ban on slug pellets was brought in a few years ago. They often contain metaldehyde, which doesn't just stop the slug dead, it is also harmful to birds, hedgehogs and even dogs. And you should never reach for the salt pot either. It's important to remember that slugs just do what slugs do. Introducing salt causes osmosis and sucks water from their bodies until they die of dehydration. You wouldn't pour salt into an open wound or rub it into your eye because you know that it is excruciatingly painful. So please don't do it to creatures that are all the more fragile. Besides, no matter how you try, you'll never eradicate them completely. But there are humane, natural ways to help keep your plant life happy. Coffee grounds, recycled wood pellets, garlic and copper tape all annoy them and could keep your marigolds looking marvellous and your pumpkins perky. Well, you get the idea. A sacrificial bed comprising plants that snails and slugs can feast on, thus leaving your other garden growers alone, is a smart way to garden harmony. And this month's top tip is, it's a familiar sight in our herb gardens and borders, and English lavender is currently in mid-bloom with its many pretty petite and very fragrant flowers. The herb is also used to help with a number of ailments and conditions, most famously as an aid to sleep. If you are struggling with insomnia, lavender may be your new best friend. If it's growing in your garden, now is a great time to prune the flowers. Cut the stems by taking around a third of its growth, but no more. Bunch them together and hang upside down for use later on.
TNF Soundings.
This is an RNIB Connect Radio podcast.
You're listening to RNIB Connect Radio. Following a nationwide hunt and public vote, Alan MacDonald from Oban has recently been crowned the voice of Lidl's Scottish self-checkouts. Alan began learning and working in sound engineering after losing his sight and is here today to talk more about his win and what it means to him. Hi Alan, thank you so much for joining us and congratulations.
Thank you, Amelia. Thanks for having me.
So you spoke to us when the voting was still happening. When did you get the call that you'd won?
Once the voting closed, I got a call within, I think it was within 2 weeks from what I remember. Voting closed towards the end of July, and I got a call near the start of August. And I knew for it was a 7-week gap between when I found out and when the news went public, because they wanted, in that time, they had to arrange a date for me to go down to Glasgow to go to a studio and record the lines, etc. And then the press release came out 7 weeks. I had 7 weeks of people asking me what's happened, and I couldn't say at that point. Finally, the cat's out of the bag, and it's been very positive so far, I'm happy to say.
Yeah, absolutely. And what was the recording process like?
That was good fun. We went down to a studio in Glasgow, and the way we did it was I said each line 4 or 5 times, and some of the Lidl hierarchy were there, and they said, I quite like number 2, I quite like number 5, got the engineer to play back number 2 and number 5 back to back, chose the best ones, that kind of thing, and said each line a few times. Like I said, we went through it relatively smoothly, I think, and hopefully, this is for the public to decide, not me, the results are okay.
Yeah, absolutely. And it sounded like the night before the recording event, you were treated to a nice hotel and you also won a prize. So can you tell us a bit more about the kind of glamour around the recording as well?
Yeah, Lidl looked after us really well. I want to say a big thank you to them for that. They took us, myself and Rebecca, down to Glasgow, and we stayed in a hotel the night before and arranged a car to come and pick us up from the hotel over to the studio. Once we recorded lines in the studio, I was taken into the green room and I was given a bag of little goodies, including a bottle of whiskey, headphones and some shortbread. The highlight for me, I'm a big shortbread monster, and a £500 gift voucher, which was absolutely fantastic. I was very chuffed with all of the above, but I think the winning the competition is the big one. That was tremendous.
Yeah, absolutely. And you retrained in sound engineering and you present on the radio. So this is a real, you know, nationwide achievement of you developing those skills and doing that kind of practice. How does it feel to have had over a decade of work arrive at this very fun achievement?
It still hasn't 100% sunk in. I know that sounds a little bit daft, but when I did stuff for Open FM, I did production, and then they talked me into doing a live show as well. But then, sadly, Open FM is no longer on the go. And so when I seen this competition come up, I thought I'll try and transfer my skills that I learned there into this, and went quite well. And even now, yesterday was the first day I went into the store and heard the recordings, because in the studio I only heard the recordings through the headphones. I heard one or two as I walked back through the control room afterwards, but not the whole lot, that's for sure. So to actually hear it up and running yesterday was quite an experience as well.
And you said friends have been letting you know that they've been hearing your voice and sending videos across as well?
Yes, I've had a few videos, one this morning, very entertaining, where one of my pals was talking as if he was talking to me when he was at the checkout in Lidl, and I do believe he made the words along the lines of, I got more sense out of this one than I get out of you, so thanks for that, Kev. But no, seriously, he's everyone who's sent me messages have been very complimentary, and it's been a very positive feedback so far, so long may that continue. I would just really like to say thank you to everyone at RNIB Connect Radio, RNIB in general, because I'm sure I got a lot of votes from the blind community, and that certainly helped push me over the finishing line. And hopefully it shows that, you know, blind people can contribute to these things in society just as well as anybody else. Fingers crossed there's more people doing similar things in future.
Absolutely. And when you've had a chance to kind of take this in and get used to hearing your own voice at the self-checkouts when you go shopping, are there any other projects or things that you're looking forward to doing following on from this?
I don't have anything else on the horizon at the moment, so I'm always on the lookout for things like this to do. But as for getting used to it, I think even you know yourself, Amelia, being on the radio, it's always strange hearing your own voice. I don't think anyone truly gets used to hearing their own voice. And the first time I heard my own voice was an advert I did on Open FM years ago, and it was quite strange, quite surreal. But being in Lidl and hearing my voice on the checkout, the strange thing was it's not just one voice, because there was another voice coming from the till behind. And the till behind, that was the bit that's going to take a bit of getting used to. But very proud to have won, and we'll see what comes next.
And if people want to get in touch with you about projects or sound engineering work, where is the best place for them to do that?
Just email me. My email address is alanmcdonald79@gmail.com, where Alan has got one L and McDonald is M-A-C.
Well, thank you so much, Alan McDonald, for joining us here on RNIB Connect Radio. And congratulations once again. We'll look forward to hearing your voice at the Lidl checkouts.
There are some changes coming to your BT landline, and we want to tell you all about it. Well, BT want to tell you all about it to get you ready for the change. Nav Hussain is with us from BT. Thanks for joining us, Nav.
Thanks for having me today.
So this is a change, a digital change that's happening to our landlines at the moment. What's going to happen?
As the UK moves to a more reliable and modern digital phone service, BT knows that many people, especially those with sight loss, do depend on their landline for independence and peace of mind. So we're making sure that the switch is simple, supported and accessible for everyone. So by January 2027, the aging analog phone network will be switched off and it'll actually be replaced by a new digital one that works through broadband. People might know of it as VoIP, IP voice, Oh, actually, by its BT name, which is Digital Voice, and it's the same home phone service you know today. The biggest difference with Digital Voice is that when you do call somebody in the same town or city, then you will need to add the local area code. And today, you don't need to do that. But going forward, like you do on a mobile phone, you will need to add the local area code when calling somebody in the same town or city.
Okay, so it's going to be the same phone in your house if you've still got a landline. It's just going to plug into the wall differently or not plug into the wall as it may be.
Absolutely. Unplugging your phone from your phone socket and it'll be plugged into the back of a broadband router, hub, modem. There's different names, but yeah, it's the broadband hub. I mean, my parents have gone through this process, so I really understand some of the reassurances that people may need. So for most people, it's a very simple switch. Over 99% of existing phones will work through Digital Voice, and the switch actually won't cost you a penny. For anyone with sight loss, BT offers a free engineer visit to make sure everything's set up and working perfectly. And when BT do get in touch, the only thing that we ask customers to do is just to confirm or book their appointment, and we'll take care of the rest.
Easy as that once again, because as you say, many of our listeners are blind or partially sighted. They may be a little bit worried about doing this, you know, a little bit of support would go a long way. And importantly as well, Nav, as you said, this is free, so kind of busting that myth is going to cost people.
Yeah, absolutely. It's completely free. And if customers don't have broadband, not to worry, we'll offer you a dedicated landline service. And in relation to power cuts, BT's got that covered too. There are free backup solutions available for those who need it most. So you'll still be able to make calls if the power goes out. You may be offered a battery backup unit, which actually powers up the broadband router, allows you to use your phone in a power cut. The alternative option is a hybrid phone, which actually you can use as a normal phone, but in a power cut, switches to a mobile signal, and individuals are able to make calls over the mobile network. It has 100 minutes free, which are refreshed on a monthly basis.
Fantastic. So lots of help and support available. As you say, they've got the engineers' visits as well, which are free. They can come out and help with that. Or there may even be listeners as well, Nav, who perhaps have a relative who's blind or partially sighted. They may be able to help out as well. They could get some advice and support too.
Exactly. Free engineer visits are available for anyone with additional needs. And BT will always reach out when it's time to arrange the support. It is really important to confirm the appointment when BT do get in touch. And from that point onwards, we take care of everything. If you're not sure whether BT is aware of any additional needs, it's really important you let us know through an online form at bt.com/connected-together. And you can also complete this on behalf of a friend or family member, which is why I would really, really encourage people to start that conversation with loved ones and the steps they may need to take in preparation. More broadly, Connected Together is a campaign we launched early this year to help carers, loved ones, and anyone offering support to feel confident about guiding someone through the switch, including people who are blind or partially sighted. The website has clear step-by-step advice, a simple form to register any extra needs someone may have, so we can make sure the right help is in place when the time comes.
Simply got all the bases covered there, Nav. So if people would like to perhaps get some more information or they want to register the details for this, how do they do that?
The Connected Together website is the best starting point. You'll find the web form there to register any additional needs, as well as any helpful guides, including an FAQ and a conversation guide for talking to a loved one about the switchover and how you can support them. So just visit bt.com/connected-together. If you prefer to speak to someone directly, you can also call BT's customer care team on 0330 123 4150.
Just remind us finally, Nav, of that deadline we want to people to be, you know, all switched over by.
So we'd like everybody to move across over by January 2027.
but get in now. Well, you can, and get those booked visits as well. Get all the information you need, whether it's for yourself or whether it's for a loved one. Nav, thank you very much for telling us all about the change and indeed highlighting all the support here on RNIB Connect Radio.
Thank you for having me on, Alan.
Those last two pieces were taken, of course, from RNIB podcasts. One or two of them maybe a few months old, but possibly of interest to our listeners. At least I hope so. And of course, RNIB Connect Radio can be heard on Freeview. I think that's channel 730, and also on the internet. It's time now for me to thank our readers this week, who were James, Debbie, Lauren, Sargit, Jenny, and Kate. And thanks also, as always, go to Sue for picking the articles you've heard. I don't pick them. It's Sue that actually selects the articles, and Pam sends them out to our readers in the background each and every week. And I wouldn't be able to do my job of pulling it all together were it not for their efforts. And a big thank you to Tony and Gavin doing the post out at the Town Hall. And I'm sorry if the pen drives and CDs reach you a few days later than we'd like, but I'm afraid once they're in the post, it's out of our hands. Just a comment to end with, I was at a very good meeting with the Pocklington Trust Sight Loss Council for Birmingham and the West Midlands, and many views were expressed about the things that bother a lot of us, that is people cycling and e-scootering and delivery vehicles on the pavements. That came up quite a lot. Overhanging objects that aren't cut back, that you can hit your head on and get smacked in the face by overhanging branches, and the subject of inaccessible pay points at supermarkets. This is where you get those self-checkouts, and there's no actual alternative using a human assistant to check out your goods, and also prevalence of touch screens, which of course those self-checkouts depend on and we can't use. I've never heard of anybody using them anyway, anybody who can't see, that is. I'll be bringing you a roundup of what was discussed at that meeting next week, but I didn't have time to pull it all together for this week's edition. But I hope also to have some information on getting involved with the Sight Loss Council next week, if you want to do that, because they do hold meetings quite regularly around Birmingham and the West Midland areas. In fact, the Sight Loss Councils have grown in number to 24 or more, and they're extending ever further north into Scotland. That's all then for this week. I hope you've enjoyed listening. We'll be back with you, of course, next week. And by then, I will have joined a discussion, which I think is hosted by the Sight Loss Council at the Sight Village exhibition in Birmingham next week, about the future of talking newspapers, because we're losing many of our older listeners and we want to attract more younger ones. So I might have a little say about that next week. But in the meantime, I'll say goodbye for this week, and we'll be with you again next week. Bye-bye, and take care.
To use our Talkphone service to listen to Sandwell Talking News or leave us a message, phone 0121 699 6696. If you are using a landline in the 0121 area, then just dial 699 6696.